Hello everyone, can you do me a favor? When you have some free time, check out Metallic Dice Games at metallicdicegames.com, a first-rate vendor of premium dice and accessories. If you see something you like, use the promo code RBP10 at checkout and save 10% off your purchase. You can use this code as many times as you like, and doing so helps to support this podcast. Check out metallicdicegames.com today and use promo code RBP10 to receive 10% off your order. Thank you for your support. The Rancor's Brothel presents a Dungeons & Dragons adventure. Nev Thelian. He made a typo. Dave.
How dare I?
How dare you make a typo in your
How dare you be names. Human?
In all of the effort that Dave has put into building this world and this campaign, including all these supplemental materials,
I only
dare he make a typo.
I only throw it out
with
there.
With a TH is the correct version.
Gotcha. So Sarah,
I like it with the F though.
I do like it with the F as well, personally, but just because you've got a lot of T's in other places, but that's me. No, just it has nothing to do with Dave whatsoever, but a couple weeks ago when I was running something, these guys roasted me alive for about an hour and a half for misinterpreting a sentence combined to another sentence. So,
actually, I have it
No, that is not what happened.
Well, I will just say I have it written with an F multiple places. So I think probably the TH is wrong. So it's probably Serafinde.
I'm pretty sure in Kira's journal it was with an F.
Or else it's with an F, except for just that first instance, I think.
Because Serafinde is with an F, so I may just be thinking of Serafinde.
Well, C's are a hard C in Elvish, so it'd be Kelefinde.
Gotcha.
Duh.
How did I not know that?
I just appreciate...
Celeborn.
Yeah, it's same thing.
Gotcha.
I had always... pronounced in my head as Celeborn.
Well, if you want, you could go by his other name, which is Teleporno.
You know, I think I will.
that is literally his other Elvish name.
It's a pretty solid name.
Is that like the...
Thanks, Tolkien.
Is that like the night adult programming on Telemundo?
That's when Galadriel is feeling... Never mind.
I'm going to promise not to read too far into this, Dave. I could, and I'll leave that to the audience's imagination, but...
Too far into what?
Any of the characters that you have created or their relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That's multiple sirens outside. We don't get that around here very often since we're out in the middle of nowhere.
Well.
Dave, can I just say I appreciate having a journal that gives us... narrative of events, and it also, like, it really helps for me piecing together the relationships of the names that we've been encountering in the snippets before. Honestly, I've had a really hard time piecing together who's who, what's what, when's when, and remembering all of that from like a year ago when we started this campaign. And understanding all the history, and this really has just helped all together a lot for
okay.
me.
There are a lot of people, yes. on the other hand, Kira's journal was only ever intended to give you half the story. This one has been written before we ever started, and I've just been waiting for you to be able to get to a place where you'd find it.
Yeah, it sounded like it was had done homework of world building before we got going.
Is there anything either meta or in character that you guys want to go into more about that or about any of the other documents you found?
Yes. What does it all mean?
What is life?
What do the numbers mean?
What is the meaning of life, Dave? I mean, I suppose in character that given sufficient data, like so fascinating stuff, and Rook would want to, I'm sure the whole group would want to discuss the Nephthelian stuff. Given some downtime, I'm sure that Rook would be happy to discuss with Nushka the findings about the dwarven architecture being adopted by the elves, which makes a lot of sense for the elves having a city that's underground. You know, why not some tips and techniques from the pros at it?
That'd be cool.
Kellen is falling in love with Malvariel. I mean, just a little.
Yeah, so, figured you would.
She swoops in saves the day. That's hot.
As we're going through all this, Nushka is looking for inconsistencies. Like, we'd gotten part of the story about Malvariel raising undead to defend the city. Never once do we hear that the council said, yes, do this now. Get him out there. And then bring him back and use him for slave labor for a while until we get tired of him.
Yeah, the narrative really takes a turn there.
I mean, I don't see any, like, from the story we've been told to Kira's journal to this journal, I don't see any real hard inconsistencies. Just different sides of a story. Am I?
For sure.
I missing something?
I would agree. I don't notice anything textually from what we've studied for the entirety of this game.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing seems particularly at odds. Kira's journal, I mean, again, they're written 21 years apart. And until Mevalriel showed back up, Kira didn't really have any reason to be talking about events that had happened 2 decades prior.
Right, but I mean, from the account that we got from Miriel or from the journal that was at the monastery.
I don't think Miriel went into any great detail. He wasn't there for right. either event. So his information is secondhand.
Did we ever find out what he was doing in Duivrad?
In Duivrad? Oh, at which time period?
When he was away from Nephthelion.
Oh.
When he was writing to Kira.
I don't think it is explicitly mentioned, no.
Okay.
I mean, you could sort of read into it and, you know, that he's just sort of a traveling dilettante spending his time doing whatever. But you have no idea whether or not he actually had the money to just live like that or if he was working on the side. Who knows?
It does seem, though, that Isile is way more practical in terms of his journaling than Kira seems almost more emotional in terms of her analysis of what the council is doing. It seems like Isile is more analyzing the situation than she was. Obviously, two different time periods, but just in terms of the way that they are, Isile seems to understand the practical use of the undead labor force, whereas Kira, while we don't get that time period, was making more emotional connections to decision making,
which is weird because in her journal she's the one who's advocating for like higher security and or tighter security. She's the one who she was there when they killed someone. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, didn't they sacrifice a one of the invaders or something? Interrogating?
They caught a Knoll scout. I'm pretty sure that Kira opposed that execution.
Yeah.
Oh, did she? I thought she was in favor.
I suggest caution and safety. Accuses me of paranoia and overreaction. We didn't get too far before Isile injected some logic and suggested we wait for the captain's actual interrogation report. It irked me to back down, but I wasn't going to go against the evidence for the sake of pride. That person actually called for the Knoll's execution.
Yeah. Okay.
But executing one of hand feels wrong to me. She seems to be, I guess, not necessarily emotional. She seems to be the maybe moral center compared to Isile. Isile's journal, with the exception of the sexy bits, is pretty cold and calculating.
Very pragmatic.
Yeah. Pragmatic's an excellent word. Thank you. I mean, it's just so weird to me that... What's the Council of Nephthelion? How many people do we know?
You do not know. From the names that you've heard...
Six? Seven?
It's at least that many, yeah.
What's interesting
but
is
you don't know for sure if those are just the prominent people that got mentioned. Maybe it was larger.
Sure. But if it gets any larger, then what's really interesting to me is what Jeff hit on earlier is Mil'Variel has no, as far as we can tell, backing. Like Isile, it's weird to me that she won that vote because Isile understands the pragmatic aspects of the undead labor force. But she won that vote. That seems very interesting to me compared to the weeks or whatever, the time period it took them to use the undead in the first place. Unless she's spiking the football, it's just very interesting to me that they decided to use the undead in the first place, considering the religious and moral implications.
That sounded more like a desperation move. They were backed into a corner.
I don't know though, because it's really interesting because there's a lot of talk about priests and stuff too. There's a lot of talk about religion in that section as well, all within right. just a few days.
But the Knolls had broken down to one gate.
He abandons their strictest beliefs.
I mean, where do you separate the line between morality and practicality? And it sounded like they had to get to that point to even get them. So it's one thing to say, okay, we're going to use weapons of mass destruction. We're going to go against a morality to do a thing, but we're going to continue to do it for the sake of convenience. That seems to me another line entirely, but I may be reading into it too much.
Well, yeah, so does bringing them back and turning them into slave labor.
Self-preservation.
No, I mean after that. It's one thing to bring them back to fight the fight. It's another thing to bring them back and then use them as slave labor for... How long is the difference between Eleniku and... whatever the next one is, Herive. Is that the next month?
Yeah, that'd be the next month.
Okay. So we go from the 26th to the 13th. So in 2 weeks, we go from council vote is passed to morale in the city is disintegrating.
Well, he said that he didn't expect them to last more than a month off the farms anyway.
It's just interesting that on that... 13th of Herive, he says, can't charge with a crime, it's already dead. Can't even do destruction of property, calling them property would fan the flames. It's very, very, well, I'm just going to keep using Jeff's words, pragmatic. And it'd be interesting to think about what the rest of the council was doing in terms of emotion. And then 2 days later, you're throwing her out of the city. It's a very, very quick, rapid about face.
Well, yeah, people were rioting.
Isile doesn't say rioting.
No, but she even is nailing it on the head the whole time. She knows that they're cowards. They're protecting their own self-interests.
Yep.
Earn, you know, on their morals to use the undead in the first place. They continue to bend their morals because they see it as, well, we've already broken them, so why not continue and just use them for labor because it's the easier road. Decide to, you know, go back when they see that the people are on uprising to now we have to bend to the people's will. We have to get on their good side. And so of course they're going to say, well, get rid of them and, you know, make her the outcast.
I would also like to point out that Troy has the hots for Mil'Variel, not just Kellen. No, you're not wrong.
I see it from a very pragmatic side.
I mean, I'm reading this and not seeing Mil'Variel as much of a villain as I envisioned her as.
Nobody in Dave's world, except for possibly me, wears a black hat. So I mean, like that's pretty Dave to a core here. Like he's going to make it gray to make it a moral decision. I don't give a shit. I'll just murder whoever's in the way. And then I'll raise them as part of my undead army, which I think Mil'Variel would find sexy. What's weird, though, is they let her walk away with them. Like, to me, that's the craziest thing. We oppose this morally and socially, but we're going to let you walk away with Grandma and Peepop and Little Billy who died at the gates.
That's the fucked up thing.
I think they were
because they're like cowards.
This is their family members and shit like that that fell in battle or as they were overrun by Knolls. And they brought them back, and they've been using the dead husks of their families as slave labor. And then they're like, yeah, we don't need them anymore. Just let her have them.
And, I mean, she went out with more than just the undead. It says near the end, her possessions and her, quote, dark army with perhaps 100 elves, which include mages, apprentices, and acolytes.
Yeah, I don't think that they could have stopped her. They needed her to voluntarily lay down the power of the necromantic army, or because they wouldn't, under her command, they'd have to actually battle her to defeat. They'd have to actually battle her army to. I don't think they could have stopped her with magic.
Well, she does make the threat.
Force me if you dare.
Yeah. It's just interesting. This becomes a dogmatic stigma, a schism, if you will, as opposed to being a moral fight, I guess. I guess morality and dogma, she makes it a different fight, which is interesting.
She's Palpatine, and the Senate is saying, yes, please do lay down your power now that this crisis is over. And he's like, nah, fuck that.
I don't know that she is, though. I don't know that she is. I may be cozying up to her a little bit too much already, but I don't know that she is. I think she's the war hero who did what had to be done, and now they're pissed at her for doing so. She's John Rambo.
I don't think she's that selfless.
I didn't say she was selfless, but she did what had to be done.
I think she was originally
not relenting the power.
The key line. Right. Remember the key line when he said that she started to see herself as the city's savior? That's getting to her head, and moral superiority and power has corrupted her to wanting to retain that power. I think she had good intentions from the start, but now she's turning into something else.
Mm. Hey, quit messing with my mental fantasy image of her, okay? She's a rogue spirit, you know, off the cuff, does what needs to be done. Don't be throwing in here some megalomaniacal shit, okay? That's too much for Kellen's fantasies.
I didn't say megalomaniacal, okay.
I've had more drinks than you, so you better be able to say megalomaniacal.
Megalomaniacal.
Nice.
I took Hooked on Phonics.
You know, the way your internet's breaking up makes it sound like you're stuttering and everything like that.
I know that Craig's a more eloquent speaker than what Discord is making him sound.
Yeah. So Melvariel is Julius Caesar.
I don't hate the comparison.
The Senate demanding that he relinquish control of the army, and he marches the army on Rome.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, you're not wrong. What's interesting, though, is that then you
figured Palpatine would be an easier reference.
Yeah, it's
saying I figured Palpatine would be an easier reference for nerds.
Yeah.
Nah.
I suppose the difference between those two is intentions.
Correct. I don't necessarily know in terms of Caesar, you know, whether or not it was direct undermining of the entire system the way that Palpatine was trying to do. I don't know that Melvariel was trying to undermine the system per se.
No, I think you're right there.
Nah, I think it was from what we walked into at Nephthelion, it seems like it was a burn the system to the ground.
Oh yeah, 20
out of spite.
20 years later, yeah.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that at the time that's what that was, though.
But I don't know why.
I mean,
unless it's just a megalomania thing where it was just Spike going back.
People love to spike the football, Jeff.
And where do the Fae come in?
Well, I think there are other...
Yes, I see
that's
the
what
eyebrows,
happens in
Dave.
The 21 there, years.
There are other things involved in here, because when does... Dave doesn't have this document in here, but when do we start having the symposiums on what is evil? Because I feel like that's a very interesting time frame in comparison.
The something heresy?
Yeah.
Kisranian heresy?
That's it.
Kisranian.
The Horus heresy. Nailed it.
Yeah.
That was published in 478 by Vire Reckoning.
And that's the same time period we have here. So 478 compared to 1655 or whatever, 1500, 1400, whatever it is? Or is that time period different?
There are different calendars.
Okay.
So give me one second.
Because we're talking about 1600s for these journals.
In your reckoning, the Kasranian heresy started before this Null invasion, like 50 years before is when that document is from.
Okay. Because see, what's interesting to me is I wonder if this is almost a, is this a religious zeitgeist? I mean, it'd be helpful if the symposium was dated differently, but I just remember that Kira makes note of it, but Isile doesn't about, I feel like she make, maybe I'm wrong. I feel like she makes notes about the moral implications about what's good and what's evil. I know she definitely does with the Null.
Yeah, she also cared more about that sort of thing.
Sure. I just wonder if there is a, is there a perspective we're missing from the priests or religious ideologies of Nephthelion? Is there a moral implication here that the pragmatic Isile and the moral Kira are not striking on that might have played a reason as to why Mevariel was tossed out? Interesting, interesting.
So now we got to figure out how Mevariel made a deal with Auril. You got magic circle, right?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got summoning spells, right?
Oh, yeah. Dave has stocked me up. What are you thinking?
I don't know. I've read too much Dresden Files.
Do you want to summon some of the Seelie court and see if I can bind them? I'm sure that will go well.
Yeah. I was thinking Unseelie, but yes.
Well, 601, infinite torture and freezing cold on the other.
Wait, what does Dresden have to do with D&D?
The Seelie and Unseelie courts of the Fae are a major part of the Dresden Files.
Correct.
Yeah, he just pulls in.
Interesting.
Yeah, because obviously that lore isn't unique to D&D.
Yeah, a lot of that is Celtic mythology.
Yeah, there's a lot of Fae courts. They set up a lot of sort of political and social structures in Butcher does a really good job in the Dresden Files of setting up these structures and then allowing his titular character Harry Dresden to work within them, against them, for them, and create some interesting narrative dynamics.
Yeah, but they do not follow all the same rules at all.
No, but a lot of the same characters are present. So, like, Jeff and I, since we're both Jim Butcher fans, are typically squee over when we hear such things because we think that maybe we'll be writing Sue the Dinosaur down Midtown Chicago after we resurrect her, because that's the kind of shit that Jim Butcher writes about.
I think I read the first three, maybe four books and then fell off after that.
But
it's also been years.
They're quite good. I highly recommend to anyone to read them. They're phenomenal. The first three, four, five are solid, but once you start getting 7, 8 deep, he really starts pulling in narratives from the first ones that are quite interesting. To the point where the latest one, I just remember sharing screenshots with Jeff and being, oh my God, he's so much fun to read. You would like him, Craig. You should definitely pick up the audiobooks if you don't want to read the actual novels.
Yep.
I've been working my way through this podcast when I'm listening to something.
They're fantastic. They're great novels. I would actually play the role-playing game if we ever got around to it, but the role-playing game is just not fleshed out very well. So yeah, you've got religious implications. You've obviously got the Seelie and Unseelie court, which I forget the connection. They were called to Mevariel, is that correct?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
I don't remember exactly.
She had Fae allies when she came back.
Right.
Oh, yes.
And we don't know if they were summoned by her. We don't know if they were marching alongside or what.
But we did talk to Oberon about it a little bit, as I recall.
A little bit. And it was Titania, right?
Yeah.
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 And they said that it would have been Auril that had something to do with that.
Yeah, you asked why Mevariel had Fae with her, and Titania said, you'll want to ask my sister. And then that was at the point when she started becoming not as friendly.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you're wrong.
So do we have a way of doing that?
Sending. Hey, bro.
Hey, bro.
Hey, bro. Talk to your sister. Said you're a bitch. Heard you like Melvariel. Can you give me some insight? Thanks, bro.
To a creature with whom you are familiar.
I know the name.
You know the name.
I know who she's married to. I know her children. How familiar I need to be. Not easily, Jeff.
Intimately.
Yeah. Yeah.
We could do something really fucking stupid, though, and try and get their attention.
Well, right. But, I mean, okay, with the point that we're at right now, in this library, in the central chamber of Nethelion, do we go back for the other key? Do we kick in this door and go fight whatever's in the central chamber?
I mean, we have time. If we have time, we can construct a plan. We could message Vampire Sparkles boy.
Yeah.
In fact, I already messaged him, as I recall.
Well, yeah, you messaged him to say that we found the elves.
Sure.
He should be on his way there.
I don't remember that because I'm apparently compulsed to not remember that, or under a Gius. I don't remember.
We're now on the other side of the continent.
No, you're in a demi.
No, we're yeah.
You're in the breezeway, remember? So, you're not inside
yes
nor outside.
And no.
We're in the breezeway is outside the other side of the continent.
Yeah. Okay, I have a mystical question for you guys, and Nushka wouldn't have any idea. You can make the party barge plane shift. Can you make it plane shift somewhere other than the astral plane or wherever it's supposed to go?
Maybe.
I mean, it might be easier than trying to trek back through, what's it called? If we plane shift back to the pandemonium, if we plane shift back to the party barge, make sure that we still have control of it.
Party, yeah. As far as you know, the ship could plane shift, like, while the Gith certainly do raid the material plane most, it's not like it's exclusive. They could go other places.
I bet you they wouldn't know to plane shift there to go find their boat.
If it works like I believe I read after the last session, when I spent 8 hours reading up on D&D lore, it can travel like through any of the planes, but it gets to all of them through the astral plane, right?
Correct. I believe that is correct.
Okay.
I don't believe it actually shifts planes directly. It's jump to astral plane, jump out of astral plane.
Gotcha. What Craig said. Yes. Good job, lore person.
Okay.
But I mean, we could send to him, let him know where we're at. Hey, bro.
Hey, we've made it inside Nephthelion. Thanks for all your help.
Not.
Don't think we need the key, bro.
I mean, to be fair, if we spend a year here, Troy can construct a teleportation circle.
Yeah.
Hey, Kellen, you rolled a 21. Good job.
Oh, good.
You recall in Kira's journal mentions of barriers to scrying and divination and such around Nephthelion. You do not know whether or not they extend to this demiplane.
Yes. That is why, like I said, we haven't gotten to that part yet, but like an hour ago, I told you once we have a rest, I have a plan because I want to do those things while I'm in a demiplane and before I go to Nephthelion. Because I don't know once
what if
I
we
step
spent
in if I can
an
do some things.
What if we spent a year just outside of Nephthelion and had a portal to the front door?
And had a what?
And we make a portal to a teleportation circle just outside of Nephthelion.
I think what Dave is suggesting.
Am I still breaking up? Damn it.
Yes, you are.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I think what Dave is suggesting also is that we would have trouble constructing something like that inside Nephthelion if there are wards to prevent some of that travel.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious to see whether or not we can actually get out of this place. Whether this demiplane is restricted in the same way.
Well, like I said, I'd like to use sending and find out.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
because we portaled into here, right?
Well, yeah.
You walked into here.
And there would have to be a portal. We walked through a portal into here.
Yeah, but once we step through the other portal, are we shut in Nephthelion, which I believe has been Troy's argument this whole time.
Yeah, if we go through that door... Without a key to get through all the doors, I don't know that we've got another way out. Except that there is some kind of...
That was my argument.
Mm-hmm. True.
There's a secret mentioned in that journal that they used to send a scout out.
That, yes, there was. And we know for sure that's in the lowest level.
Okay, but here's the thing.
And fun fact, you swam not too far away from it when you jumped off a boat at the beginning of the campaign.
Okay, but hear me out. Like, the folks who lived in Nephthelion had to have an ability to get to and from this library demiplane, right? So theoretically, if we go to Nephthelion, we should be able to come back here. And if we got here through a portal, we should be able to leave here through a portal.
Yeah.
We ought to be able to leave the same way we came in.
Unless it's an airlock.
Yeah, but
the portal going from Pandemonium to here could be a fluke. And we won't know until we try.
Yes.
Presuming this argument is going to take more than a day, Dave. Because
mm-hmm.
it sounds like it is.
Portal out of.
Once I get a long rest, I'd like to cast Sending, if that's all right.
Okay.
I don't know how much you want to advance or how much you want this to take place before I'm able to rearrange my spells.
Well, I mean, obviously, you find some books, you take the long rest that we've already talked about, so you can prepare spells then, and that following morning, try a Sending spell.
Just because...
One thing, while everyone's doing everything and everything like that, Nushka would look for manuals about exercise and physical improvement. I know that's one kind of book that Nushka would be interested in here.
It's just pictures of really muscular looking Russian dudes lifting like kettlebells. Then they fight a bear by the end.
Well, Jeff, it does not appear that there is one in this library.
It was worth a shot.
In the nerd demiplane, they don't have a manual on how to deadlift? Shocking.
I'm like the mages of Nephthelion and the scribes were not concerned with being swole.
You could probably magic swole yourself, Craig.
Well, that's the thing. If there was one of those magic manuals that raise your ability scores, this would be the place to find it.
You do have a point.
Thought I'd check.
I'd like to send a message, Dave, so you can contemplate this, because I assume you'll have to contemplate a response.
You prepare your 25 words and send them off, but the spell fails.
That's a 5% chance, you dick.
No, the spell...
The barriers on Nephthelion extend here.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to test that then.
Okay, in what way?
Well, I didn't have the right spells prepared to test that.
I think you just did.
Well, I understand that, but I'd like to confirm, that's all.
Test number two, for a scientific method.
Yeah.
Or is it something like the alchemist's method in a fantasy universe?
No, I was going to ask Troy if he'd try and teleport something mundane somewhere. See if it fizzles. Other than that, I could try and summon something to us. I mean, you know, options.
As far as I know, teleport functions on creatures, not items, unless they're carried.
A single object you can see within range to a destination, at least in the quick Google I looked at.
You mean the actual teleport spell?
Correct.
The actual teleport spell says you and up to 8 willing creatures of your choice or a single object. You're right.
I don't know that Troy would have actual teleport.
I thought he did.
No. At least I don't know. Because he would have just hit that level.
Oh, he has teleportation circle.
Yeah. Wait, but you are, what's your domain?
Arcane.
Oh, Arcana. Okay. Not travel. Oh, wait. Is travel even a domain in this edition?
No. Not that I know of.
I don't believe teleport is on the cleric list, but I am double checking.
I thought he was using teleport. Maybe it was teleportation circle.
No, it is not on the cleric spell list. Plane shift is, as is etherealness.
I'm just curious if I have another way to test it.
I mean, you could try and plane shift us out.
Oh, that does the same thing. Dave, can I misty step?
Where to?
30 feet
we already,
away.
We already know that misty step works inside.
How do we know misty step already works inside?
Because
you
we were doing
step
it.
Through the mists and appear 30 feet away.
You and Inari both, I believe, misty stepped.
Inside here?
Not inside here, but inside Nephthelion. Because Inari, I know, misty stepped up through arrow slits.
Yep, I remember that.
Well, what's weird is you actually leave the...
Yeah, I don't think the block is on teleportation.
Maybe not.
Inside to outside.
I cast Fireball, because I'm mad.
The stacks and stacks of books catch on fire.
It's magical fire.
Including your grimoire.
It's magic, it can't burn.
You burned it with magic fire, though.
Savash is going to be pissed.
Yeah. All right, fine. Since I can't talk to people outside here, do we ever learn anything?
You have to suffer.
Is there anything else Sariel tells us about the fact that she appeared out of a fucking horrific monster of epic proportions? I smile with a cheesy glance and go, you're welcome, by the way.
Between your knowledge and what she'll tell you, you know that she got trapped in the negative plane. And Nightwalkers, essentially, whenever someone gets trapped in the negative plane, a Nightwalker is created. And if the Nightwalker dies outside of the negative plane, that's basically it. The person is trapped forever, no way out. Maybe short of a wish. I'm not sure if a wish even works. But if the Nightwalker is coerced or somehow goes back to the negative plane, then the person can escape. And so you banished a Nightwalker back to the negative plane.
And you pissed
welcome.
Dave off.
Absolutely, I did. I'm sure he hasn't thought about that and has been mad.
Wait, I'm sorry, I didn't follow. So is someone now trapped forever or someone is freed?
Someone was freed. Sariel was freed. As a result of Kellen banishing the Nightwalker.
So is Sariel from Nephthelion?
No, she's from Volnestad.
Interesting.
So how the hell did you get stuck on the negative plane?
It's complicated.
It usually is.
Well, you're not going anywhere.
Why'd you
he
have
says
to go?
Threateningly.
Some experiments went awry, as they sometimes do. Obviously, it was not the intended outcome.
Okay.
I say I know the feeling and I wink at her.
Oh. You know, they make a little blue pill for that.
I'm a mage. There's plenty of spells. I don't need a pill.
Raise undead.
Oof. Ouch. Damn, Dave. So does she do planar shit then? Is that her specialty?
I don't know that I would. In a way, it's not my only field.
If you were to categorize yourself by a broad spectrum of, say, 9 classes and a rough level between 1 and 20, where would we be talking about? Ballpark.
I mean, I think Troy has plane shift now.
Yes. It's on the cleric spell list.
But I mean, he just got access to 7th level, right? It is a 7th level spell,
yes,
right?
Yes. Sariel says, I would more or less qualify myself as a generalist, just with specific interests.
Okay, good to know. So we're not getting any contact from the outside. We either leave here or go forward.
Succinctly put.
Aren't those the same thing?
Well, I mean, we either f*** off from here or we go open the door.
Right, aren't those the same thing?
No.
No, we try and plane shift back to...
anywhere.
To the party barge or something like that. Or we continue into Nephthelion from here.
Here's an Arcana question I'm not familiar with plane shifting. If we plane shifted away from here to go pick up party barge, etc., would we know how to plane shift back here?
So plane shift, you can describe a general place, a target in general terms, such as the City of Brass on the elemental plane. One of the examples given. I mean, and you could say the City of Nephthelion.
The Library in Nephthelion.
You could say that. Now, and you appear in or near that destination. If you're trying to reach the City of Brass, for example, you might arrive in its Street of Steel before its Gates of Ashes, or looking at the city from across the Sea of Fire. Like, so it's not exact.
Okay.
But then on top of that, if Nephthelion's wards would prevent that, then it's quite possible also that you will, like, effectually smash your faces into a magical brick wall.
Okay.
Well,
I mean, I guess we... Well, maybe not. Never mind.
Kellen actually experienced this once already when he tried to misty step past one of the doors. Or, not dimension door, past one of the doors.
Sounds like a thing I would do.
You got flung backwards and took some force damage.
What do you guys want to do? I can get us back here if we want to come back here. Do we want to try and go get the final key?
I wanted to do that before we left where we were.
Well, we didn't know where we were going. Now that I've been here...
we didn't realize that we were going to...
Now that I've been here, I can come back.
I think that sounds good.
You didn't know we were going to Nephthelion? That was the whole point, I thought.
No. Now that I've been here, I can come back. I have teleport now. I have a book is taken from this library. I can teleport to this exact spot.
We didn't realize that following the graffiti in Pandemonium would lead us into a back door into Nephthelion. If we need to go back and get the other key before proceeding, we can do that. That's fine.
Well, let's get the achievement then. Troy will sleep better at night. We'll have all keys. We'll unlock that achievement. Let's teleport to fucking Vampire Sparkle Gym. Oh, we can get the party barge if you want, I guess.
Well, I think he's meeting us there.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's plane shift back to there.
What do you think? What?
Kellen did a sending to him to say, hey, we made it.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, well.
We can't do that. We have to protect the secret. Keep it secret. Keep it safe.
So what do you guys want to do?
So Rook would be somewhat disappointed to feel this close to where we're eventually wanting to be, to actually get into the parts of Nephthelion and choose to go away. However, I do think it is the wiser option to go get the last key and pick up the party barge.
Nika expresses some disbelief, and he's like, you're saying that we walked through a hellish journey in the dead city, found this portal, made it to Nephthelion, and you just want to walk away?
All right, fine. We'll see what's behind.
What was the point of me even bringing you here?
We'll see what's behind door number two.
Strictly said.
Okay. Said what, Troy? You specifically said what?
Well, we heard the sigh.
Troy?
Did he drop?
I don't know. There's a big bar over those doors, right?
The doors to the rest of the city?
Yeah.
They are barricaded with furniture.
Okay, that's the other question. Ooh. Who did that?
Yeah, are there any corpses in here?
There are not.
So if the doors are barricaded, but there's no one inside of here, that would assume that there's another way out.
Nah, I think they f***ed off too. They came in here, barricaded themselves, realized we're dicked, and we have no food, and these might be the descendants of,
So Nika didn't have any idea this was here, right?
The portal, no.
Okay.
How did your descendants escape Nephthelion? Or your Ancestors.
Ancestors.
They didn't escape. Well, at least most of them didn't. Most of them were not in the city when it fell. They are the diaspora that have just grouped together.
The ones who did escape, did they ever say how they escaped? Because I think they came to here, barricaded, and then teleported out.
The ones who did escape were the few that were with Kira. There was not many, but there were a few.
While we're having an argument, I will go over there and start moving the chairs out from in front of the door.
I mean, you also have the graffiti in the dead city.
Right. I mean, it's entirely possible they plane shifted from here into the dead city and went, oh, I'm dicked, and then died somewhere along the way.
Where did you say you were going to do?
I'm just
going to
start moving the chairs from in front of the door. We're going to open the door sooner or later, so the chairs might as well not be there.
Okay. Troy, are you back?
I think.
Hey, it's a Troy.
Cool.
Okay. You said you were specifically, you specifically said something, and then we never heard what you specifically said.
Right. Let's move on.
Okay.
Okay. So, going through the doors?
I mean, at this point, I'm going to open them because you guys keep talking about them.
Well, okay. If you want to spend more time in the library even before you go out, you can. Did you want to spend more time?
Well, I can't there? Send. No. That was my plan. I was going to contact some friends, but we can't do that from here. Now I'm just kind of curious what happens when I open the door.
Dave, this architecture book, does it reference any Nephthalian architecture specifically, or is it generally about elves adapting Dwarven architecture?
The book itself is about Dwarvish architecture. Okay. The notes in the margins are by an Elvish architect and contain thoughts about adapting it, essentially.
Okay, but not any specifics to Nephthalian?
I mean, yes, in broad senses of like, well, I could probably use, you know, I'm forgetting the names of my arches, but you know, I could use this kind of arch instead of what the dwarves usually use, you know, stuff like that.
But not this is where you hide the secret door in the throne room.
Right. No, okay. No.
It's not blueprints. There's nothing like blueprints. It's more like general musings.
Okay.
Okay, so what's on the other side of the doors, Dave?
Okay, so you pull away all the desks and the chairs and random cases and so on, and then unbar the doors, which appear to be made of probably wood, but coated in mithril. And when you swing the doors open, you get hit in the air by a blast of freezing cold air and see a hallway in front of you that has a few doors on the sides. The floor is covered in frost and occasional ice and is completely dark.
Hey, Craig.
Yeah?
Do you make mechanical toys as one of your things?
I do.
Do you have wind-up toys?
I don't see why not.
Can you set a wind-up toy to go out, turn around, and come back?
Yeah, I believe I could absolutely do that. I will, in fact, do so.
Okay, that's your like level one tinkerer sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, cantrip.
Oh, it's a cantrip? I thought it was just an ability to be able to make stuff.
It is an ability, but I meant that I can use it essentially as like a cantrip.
Gotcha. So what sort of thing are you making?
A rubber duck with wheels. Will be golden in color.
Okay. And what does it do? Does it just sort of like roll forward and then reach a point where it rolls back, or?
It has a little springy tail that wags back and forth, and mandatory. It makes a little squirky quacky noise. It's like a duck quack, but chirpy. So quack, quack, quack. And it goes in a wavy pattern forward. It'll go out 15 feet at a time and then turn and come back.
So at the moment, if you sent it out, it would only go out 15 feet and then come back?
I suppose that's a reasonable distance.
Yeah, I mean, back up a little bit, so maybe it goes out 10 feet. And basically, I want to make sure that this portal is two-way. Because if we see it slam against an invisible wall, we know once we walk through here, we can't come back.
Or we could see it go out successfully, but not be able to come back.
or it does one of those weird things where it goes out on fire, and then we know we probably don't want to go out the door.
It's the artificer's version of checking for traps.
Yes, exactly. No, it's, yeah. We don't have
a
rogue.
Can it be a canary instead of a duck?
I just like the idea that he winds it up, it rolls forward 4 feet, goes through the portal, and then on the other side it's just a goddamn ball of fire. Well, guess we're going back for that key.
Okay, so you wind up the duck and roll it on out. It passes across the threshold onto the ice, waves back and forth a little bit, slides a bit on the ice, but then turns around and spins back to you. It does cross the threshold back into the library without any issue, and you're able to pick it back up. It's a little cold to the touch, but otherwise seems totally normal.
Cool.
Let's go.
Yeah. Step through.
And Jeff chokes to death.
Give me a second.
Portals, man.
Just like holding your breath going through the Stargate. They always say don't do that. I think that's right. I don't remember
now. I was kind of hoping that like some creature would jump out and pick up the duck, and I'd be like, never pick up a duck in a dungeon.
I know that's a reference to something, but I can't recall what.
Wasn't like early edition of D&D or third edition or something? One of the earlier editions where there was a duck in a dungeon that was a trap.
Okay, from one of the written campaigns or something?
I don't know what it was from. I only know of it as a reference.
Fair enough. Perhaps one of our audience will know and can comment.
My bad.
You're good.
Okay, so stepping out into the hallway?
Yeah, me and Pipsky will go first.
Sure.
I close the doors.
You step into the hallway. It is immediately... feels as cold as the Northland that you are native to. The ice and the frost underfoot like reminds you of what a stone structure is like, you know, if it's got no roof and no doors and, you know, like a ruin that would be out on the surface. Only difference is, I guess, is that there's no actual drifted snow. The doors on either side of the hallway appear sort of frozen shut. You probably could get through them if you wanted to, but it would probably be noisy.
So are we in a small room then?
No, at the moment it's like a hallway about 15 feet wide.
Oh, okay. Does this appear to be a normal door, or is this a magical door like in the side of a hallway that's odd?
Which door are we talking about?
The door we're coming out of, the door into the library.
The door you're coming out of is at the end of a hallway.
Gotcha. And how many other doors in the hallway?
A couple.
Okay.
Between 2 and 4. And it is dark. Nushka, do you want to try and get through any of those doors or keep moving forward?
For right now, keep moving forward. If they look like they're sealed by ice.
Okay. There are a couple, a little bit further down, there's an opening on either side of the hallway, an open area the size of a fairly large room. And there's a counter on either side. With it looks like a chair behind it. Looks like perhaps there were some sort of reception or something like that. And then in front of you, there are 2 doors that used to be attached to walls. Their hinges have been broken and torn off and are now laying on the floor. They have, there's a number of skeletons trapped beneath the doors. And you can also see a few outside the doors. Outside the doors, there appear to be some sort of like a veranda with columns and then stairway that leads down to a wide open area.
Okay. Are there any signs of movement or anything anywhere? Like on the other side of that counter?
No.
These broken doors?
From where you are, like between the 2 counters in that room, you don't see any movement.
Okay. Are the rest of you keeping up with me, or are you waiting back in the library to see what happens to me?
Oh, no, I'm right behind you.
I wouldn't say right behind you, but yes, I am following.
I'm assuming Troy's there, too.
Rook, I also assume so.
Rook feels kind of bad after having run off on his own to go explore rooms while people were you know, on their own. So going to do more of the sticking together this time.
That's what they all say.
So should we check out these rooms or should we proceed on in? What do you guys want to do?
I think we should check out the rooms.
Do we have a semi-quiet way of getting these doors open?
You said they're frozen over, or are they frozen? Are they like frozen shut?
They're frozen shut, sort of in the way that a car door is in the dead of winter when it's very cold.
Light a torch and hold it over the locking mechanism. See if we can loosen it up.
That's not a bad idea.
I mean, it might work for the lock, but the rest of the door is still going to be frozen.
To do like a safe version of heat metal.
The other point is that a torch will involve light. If you want to do that, you can.
Okay. Seems like Dave is advising against this, so let's keep moving.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so you're leaving the doors alone and instead...
We're mostly just trying to get our bearings right now, right?
Right. Yeah. Is there more corridor down beyond the two counters?
Yeah, so let's just...
No, it opens out onto the veranda.
Okay, let's check out the veranda.
Okay.
While we're still getting our bearings, just open easy to open doors and leave the hard ones shut for now.
So you walk out onto the veranda, and as you step out, you see off to the right a skeleton wearing some armor sort of turn and look in your direction. But then further off in the darkness beyond any of your range of dark vision, you just hear a voice that says,
"Well, well, the seal has been broken."
Ken.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
Dave,
run.
Can you throw out an "I'll get you" gadget? Because I feel like that would be very appropriate.
"I'll get you next time" gadget.
Just for you.
Perfect.
Next time.
What's...
But yes, at this point, it's initiative.
Ah, oh, f***.
which I suppose it would be helpful if I put you on the map. And yeah. I did preload it, so hopefully it loads quick this time.
I didn't know that it was going to be applicable, but Dave, just FYI, since I can level up, I can keep more of my, not incantation, what are they called? The artificer items? Infusions.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to use my an infusion slot to just have a set of dark goggles on, so I'm just going to keep dark vision available.
Okay. Let me just add that to your token real quick.
Did you just roll for all of us?
I can.
You didn't roll for all us. I could see all your monsters again, though. I like looking at your names.
I rolled for the NPCs.
Gotcha.
I can roll for you if you don't want to bother.
No, I'll roll. I just didn't know what was going on. I like playing this old school, man. Tossing my dice, watching them roll low. Ooh, Babby. That's a good roll for me.
Can only see Claw right now.
That's interesting.
Can I set my own?
Oh, hey, I didn't update Pipsky.
Craig, when you say you can only see Claw, does that mean that's the only thing you see on the whole map, or?
It was. It's if I saw the whole map a second ago, or I saw what Rook could see.
Yeah, if you click on a token, it shows you only what that token can see.
Ah, okay.
So if you click away from Claw, then.
Don't move, Cody.
Okay, so... Oh, I keep forgetting Claw does not get his own initiative, so I'll remove him from the order. Kellen, what did you get?
I rolled a nat 20 on my die for 24. I don't know if I can update it.
Sorry, got it.
Thanks.
I see why. Okay, it's because Claw doesn't have his dark vision turned on.
Oh, yeah. Does Claw have dark vision?
I believe he does. I'll double check.
Did Pipsky, do you want to roll for Pipsky's initiative too?
No, she goes on my turn.
Okay. And then Alec, need initiative from you too.
Yes, Claw has dark vision 60 feet.
Okay. I will go ahead and update the prototype token so I don't have to remember that multiple times. There we go.
I'm not sure that we still have Troy.
Yeah, it's seeming that way. Oh, he put it in the chat. He's 13. Okay. Rook, you need your initiative too.
Oh.
Nice.
So, wonder of wonder, miracle of miracles, Kellen goes first.
What is the range of this spell? Oh, from 30 feet. Where are you at? Yeah, I don't know if... Let's see. Where the shit... Oh, you're on top of Pipsky, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. I just need to make some measurements. Okay. I am going to, if I can, move myself... Oh, I collide with a wall. I'd like to move myself behind a pillar.
Mm-hmm.
Since I can't see any enemies yet from here, I don't think.
From behind the pillar now, you can. You can see this skeleton over here.
Oh, I can see him over there. And I am going to cast haste on Nushka.
Nice.
Go get him, Grandma.
How the hell does haste work in this?
Your speed is doubled. You get +2 to AC. You get advantage on dex saves, and you get one extra action a turn.
My speed is doubled?
One creature's okay. speed is doubled.
Okay.
Do you want me to haste the mount instead?
Nah, the extra action's probably worth it. Okay. +2 bonus to AC, advantage on dex saves, and it gains an additional action on each turn. Take the attack, one weapon attack only, dash, disengage, hide, or use an object action. Okay.
So go do work.
Just don't get hit, because I can't take actions after that.
I'm hiding behind a pillar for a reason.
Cool.
And that's my turn, Dave.
Okay. Behind Sariel and behind Rook, you hear a bit of the broken door that you walked past shift, and one of the skeletons stands up, bangs a sword on its shield, and then takes a step forward and swings at Sariel. She's not wearing armor, so she's definitely going to take a hit from its scimitar. And then it proceeds to bash her with its shield.
This appears to be taking place just out of my sight range. Is that like here, guys?
Yeah, right inside the... You hear the sounds coming from just inside the building.
Thanks, Jeff. It's the sounds of belching and hellfire.
Yeah. Rook, you're up.
Sorry. Trying to do what to do here.
That's weird. For some reason, when I click on... Rook's token, or like anyone's token, really, just about everyone's dark vision is sort of dim, but then when I click on Nushka's, it's really bright.
Are you clicking on Nushka or on Pipsky?
On Nushka. Nika also has really bright dark vision for some reason. Oh well, doesn't really matter. What would Rook like to do?
I think... Alright, I'm still, Last week, I read through my spell list, but I'm checking them here. I'm going to cast Fire Shield.
Yeah, okay.
Fourth level, it's on myself. 10 minutes, but does not require concentration. I'm going to do a Warm Shield. So for the next 10 minutes, whenever a creature within 5 feet of me with a melee attack... they take 2d8 fire damage.
Okay. And that also sheds bright light. So I'll go ahead and add that.
Yes. For 10 feet and dim light for another 10 feet. And I will make my way. Yeah. I'm going to move Rook 30 feet towards the skeleton he can see. That will be Rook's turn. And then
As you get there, you also see off in the distance a little ways further to the south, a skeleton. Sorry, not a skeleton. I just said that because you moved next to one. A centaur.
Okay. Yeah.
And it appears to be carrying a pike.
Okay. Claw will take a step up. I'll make it 2 steps up. Just one. And bite the skeleton that just attacked Sariel.
Okay.
And axe at your spell attack modifier to hit. It's been a long time since I've had Claw actually bite anybody because I'm usually using my bonus actions for other things. Is my... Ooh, that's cool.
What is?
Spell attack... Oh, spell attack bonus is your proficiency plus your spell attack modifier, but since he gets the modifier, he doesn't... That his attack doesn't include the proficiency bonus, right?
You tell me. I've not looked at it recently.
This is his spell attack modifier, which is my intelligence modifier, right?
Right, yes.
Not the total bonus to my spell attacks, which also includes my proficiency. Okay. He rolls a 14 to hit.
Unfortunately, a 14 is just going to bounce off of its chainmail, I believe. Yes, chain shirt.
Okay. That's my turn.
Okay. Now that you are lit up nice and bright, an arrow sails out of the darkness directly for you. Does a 24 hit you?
Let me look. My AC is 24.
Okay. Then that arrow will hit you for 17 piercing damage. And then a moment later, Alec, another skeleton crawls up from underneath the door right next to you and next to Claw and is going to swing its scimitar in your direction. That's an 8 to hit. So not so much.
That will not.
But it swings again and does better, a 16.
Still will not hit.
Okay. He then attempts a shield bash, but this time against Claw.
Dave's pissed off he's not hitting you.
A 12. That's probably not going to work either.
No, he's AC 15.
Okay. A moment later, you hear the galloping sound of hooves as a centaur charges out of the middle of the plaza. past what appears to be some sort of plinth with a lion statue on the top of it. Some of you can see parts of it, depending on how far out you are. Nushka can. And let me just double check how this works. Okay. So this centaur charges towards Rook, and as it comes, it's sort of just... lowers a lance and then and is preparing for like a a hard hit. As it comes, you also see it raise up its left hand crush a stone and just sort of let dust fall as it comes. Let's see here. Nope, that's only a 17 to hit. So Rook okay. side Rook sidesteps it at the last instant.
That is the definition of, what's the word, nonplussed?
Oh, hang on a second. It did have advantage.
He's making up rules.
No, I'm remembering stuff from character sheets I wrote months ago. Okay, with advantage, it's a 25 to hit.
Let's connect.
Okay, so that lance impacts with 32 piercing damage behind it.
Oh,
as it briefly lifts you off the ground and then drops you back down.
He will take 7 fire damage in return.
Okay. You hear more hooves out in the distance as another centaur charges in towards the steps, but isn't quite able to make it to Nushka.
You know, I have to double check, but I think my tiny servant with my healing item triggers his reaction, but I'll double check here.
Okay, well, in the meantime, another arrow sails in towards Rook, but will miss.
Are these centaurs relatively normal looking? They're not like undead centaurs or anything strange?
They do not appear to be undead, no.
Okay. I'm just making sure they're like the fawn or whatever we saw before. They just seem preserved but not dead and resurrected, I guess.
Right. Sariel is up. She has one skeleton behind her and another one on the other side of Claw nearby. Let's see.
Give him the stick.
Don't give him the stick.
No, give him the stick.
Oh.
Pork chop sandwiches, pork chop sandwiches.
G.I. Joe.
Oh my god, what the f***?
She's going to go ahead and cast a spell. And who's close? Alec and Nushka, you probably are able to see that as she finishes casting, her skin takes on a grayish, like hardened hue.
Casting stone skin.
Holy shit, we're fighting with Husk.
And that does seem to be the case. She is then going to stay put. Nika is up and is right behind Nushka and is going to run forward a little bit, get in front of the centaur that just rode up, and go ahead and swing longsword and shortsword.
Yeah, in the fighting order.
A 15 will hit, so it does a little bit of damage. Second attack also hits. And then comes in from the other side with a short sword, but that one is parried by the centaur. Alec, you are up.
Throw a slight hypothetical at you.
Slight?
A 10-foot cube.
Yeah.
Multiples of those. Can I place multiples of those on the corners of these large creatures? So, like, hypothetically, can I place four on each of these, like, giant or large creatures? Would that work?
Like, could you have a corner of each cube on the thing?
I think that's what he's asking, yes.
So basically you're covering a 4x4 area centered on a large creature?
No, he's wanting to have... Or are you wanting to have multiple of the areas hit one large creature? What are you trying to do?
All of the above, yes.
What is most effective for my damage? I
mean, if it's a single spell, they don't take multiple sources of damage... Unless it specifically says so, like Meteor Swarm. But are we talking about
Firestorm?
Yeah. Firestorm, the cubes are...
10-foot cubes.
The cubes let you determine where the fire is, but it's not. They're not going to take multiple damage from being in multiple cubes.
Must have at least just one place adjacent to another cube.
Just want to suck the fun out of everything, Dave.
Independent damage?
You roll damage once for the whole spell. The cubes just make it so that you can really conveniently put the fire exactly where you want it.
Yeah, it's one roll for the whole cube, or for all cubes, not roll per independent cube. You just have to make the cubes touch like I have to make the walls touch.
But,
like, make the balls touch?
Like, you could do one there, and you could do, you know, one there, and you could do one there, and you could do, like, one there or something.
I believe they do have to touch on at least a whole side. They can't be diagonally.
One face adjacent to. Yes, you're correct. So you'd have to do one there.
Yeah.
Makes it less fun.
It does make it less fun, yes.
I mean, it lets you cover a pretty big area.
It does.
But if you want to do something else, you can do that.
I can, if I'm only going to feasibly hit three of the people, then I'd rather have them...
Yeah, save your...
Yeah, that's fair. Don't pop off until they're lined up for you. Troy?
Looks like he's measuring.
I got a different thing here.
Okay. I'm just wanting to get in your mindset, you know? Curious on what you're doing.
I'm going to cast at this spot. It's not making it up, but here. I'm going to cast Insect Plague.
All right.
Foot radius sphere. Hit all three of those while not hitting allies.
Okay. This is a great use for the template tool. If you go to the corner ruler button on the top left and then click on the circle, you can drag it out and put it where you want it.
Ooh, okay.
And then once you've made it, you can move it around. Just click and drag.
Oh, very nice. You put Rook right in that corner there where he's not hit by it. Depending on how Dave wants to do the template, that should work.
We are.
There you go. So that'll hit all three of them. Looks like they have to make a constitution save.
Circle.
Okay, this centaur here is going to fail the save. The skeleton behind it is going to roll a 21, which I believe will succeed. And then the centaur over by Rook will also roll a 21. So I guess they just take half damage on this success.
The
area is lightly 25 obscured.
Damage. Full.
Okay, 25 is full. Okay, so the centaur right in front of Nika is showing some decent wounds. Not quite bloodied, but hurt. And the other two look like they've only taken a few knocks so far. However, that area is also lightly obscured, where you just placed down that plague.
It's not a bad call, because that should provide some cover, maybe, from other shots if there are.
So I'm going to go ahead and do, I believe I can do a negative light radius, so that it will actually be a, yeah, area of darkness. Cool. Is that your turn, Alec? Did you want to move or do anything else?
I'll stay put.
Okay. A long range shot is going to come flying across the plaza towards Rook and will almost certainly miss, but you know, we don't know until we try. Yeah, that's a 10, so that shot misses. The follow up shot is a 17, so both of them are going to go wide.
By the way, I'm rolling it now. I had to double check how that functioned. But I've got my tiny servant set up to every time I take damage, he presses the button on the my magic item that casts Cure Wounds.
Okay.
So
your little auto stim.
Yes.
That's fun.
I like to think it's one of those ostrich things that soaks up the water and then tips back every time it tips down and bonks him.
Yeah. Nushka, a skeleton runs up towards you and swings its scimitar. First one's a 16 to hit. I believe that misses.
That misses.
The follow-up is even worse. It does go ahead and try its shield bash, but that's only a 15 to hit. So all of them you are able to easily parry and bat aside. Okay. And then it's your turn.
Nushka and Pipsky will move up 5 feet. Nushka is going to attack recklessly. I'm trying to decide if I want to rage. Actually, since Pipsky moved, she'll go ahead and do her attacks. She'll attack the skeleton.
Okay.
I still can't control Pipsky.
Really?
Yep.
Aww.
Rolled an 18 for a 24 to hit.
A 24 will certainly hit.
Yeah, I didn't think about getting dice out. Has 12 damage on the bite.
Okay.
And a 21 on the tail.
Yep.
For 6 damage.
Okay. And then Nushka.
And Nushka is going to attack recklessly.
Okay.
Great sword.
Against the centaur or the skeleton?
Yeah. Nushka's going to go ahead and rage.
Okay.
Rage!
And attack the centaur on the first one.
Okay.
Attack recklessly using Great Weapon Master. I don't think 15 is going to hit.
It actually will just get through its chain shirt.
Oh, no sh**.
That was a pretty poo-poo roll. I'm glad you hit.
Yeah, I know. So, plus 10, raging.
Hasted.
That doesn't add anything to it yet. I'm trying to figure out damage.
Oh, sorry.
So plus 14 plus 1d6.
Great Weapon Master.
That's why it's 14 instead of, is that right? No, that can't be right.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely got to be a bigger number.
Well, that's because that's what's on top of the regular modifier that the thing's already gonna auto-calculate.
Gotcha.
So 31 damage.
Very nice. That centaur is definitely into the bloodied range now. And even though it only just rode up a few seconds ago, it is already in bad shape.
Okay, I will switch back to the skeleton.
That's a better roll.
That's a 25 to hit.
That certainly hits. 26 damage. Very nice.
There's a 1 in there. Does that need to be rerolled?
It already did.
Oh, okay.
Yep. The skeleton is now also down to powdered? Cracked? Fractured. There we go.
And my, since Cody cast haste on me, I'll get one more attack and I'll throw that at the centaur.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
20 to hit.
Yep.
That's spell go.
There we go, baby.
I'll take it. 30 points.
That centaur is now very badly hurt and not too far from death's door.
Cool. And that'll be me.
Okay. A moment later, behind you, another skeleton rises up and is going to put an arrow straight towards Nika's back.
Hang on a second. I have to read something.
Oh, cavalier thingy?
Well, that's not very nice.
Cavalier thingy. You can go ahead and tell me your roll.
That's 14 to hit.
Oh, so does that hit him?
It does not, no.
Okay, then never mind.
Okay. A second arrow will come in. And that one's a much better 22 to hit.
Okay.
And it would hit Nika, yes.
So you should be able to cavalier that, I think, right?
That's what I'm working on. And on my attack, I would have marked the centaur.
Okay, that's all right.
If you or a creature you can see within 5 feet of you is hit by an attack, roll a 1d8 as a reaction. If you're wielding a melee weapon or a shield, roll the die and add the number rolled to the target's AC.
Nice.
That's a 4.
Okay, so that would bring Nika's AC up to 21.
Oh,
not quite enough.
Well, he's going to have resistance against the damage.
Okay, that's still helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so he only takes a few points of damage.
Missed it by that much, Jeff.
Yep. It's the first time I've really gotten to use it. Nobody else ever gets up in melee.
Don't look
at
me.
And a moment later, Alec, another skeleton, rises up right next to you, swings its scimitar. It's only a 15 to hit, so no dice. It tries again, and this time rolls a 19. Does a 19 hit?
It does not.
Okay. It sort of goes clonk, clonk twice against your shield, and then sort of feebly tries its own shield bash. However, it just clonks against your own shield and has no effect.
Jesus Christ, Dave.
What?
I'm just watching the initiative tracker trying to figure out what's where since I'm behind a pillar and can't see most of what's going on. and Dave just keeps adding more shit every time I look at it.
Rook, another centaur comes up along your other side sort of charges in with its pike and swings the blade down towards you. Rolling a 24 to hit.
Well, my AC is still 24 last time I checked, so.
Okay.
How are you looking, Rook?
I had dropped to 80 out of 129, but I'm back up to 90 after my auto heal.
This is a 22 points of incoming piercing damage, which is honestly really lucky. I rolled low.
Okay. I will take it, and it will take...
Go ahead, but it also is going to rear up and trample you with its hooves, and it rolls a crit on that. Okay, so it takes 5 fire damage as it tries to come up and get to you.
It's going to take 5 more for each, or it's going to take 3 more for the second hit.
Okay, its hooves are going to do 19 bludgeoning damage.
So 22 and then 19.
A moment later, from somewhere in the middle of this plaza area, you hear the sudden whooshing sound of wings flapping. And then flying over the plinths with the lion statues in the center comes a skeletal draconic figure with decaying wings and flesh hanging off of it. And it swoops low for a second before it looks at everybody coming out of the doors of the Mage's Guild, opens its jaws, and unleashes a blast of lightning in your direction.
Who puts dragons in
first? Is that centaur ending its turn?
Yeah. Wait, which one? This one hasn't gone again.
The one that you just...
This one here is the one that just made its attacks.
He may not.
I don't see one.
He may not be able to see it because of the line of sight. That's the only issue with the line of sight.
Oh yeah, right.
There's one. See where my ping is.
The one
is.
That's in your insect plague hasn't taken another turn yet.
Okay.
Okay. So this lightning breath is a 5 foot wide thing. It is 30 feet up in the air at the moment. So it goes over the few folks on the stairs. And let's see. Well, maybe that's not exactly where it wants to go. Like here, I think. Okay, so it sort of flies over top of the insect plague. And then... Do I want it?
High up, is it?
It is 30 feet up. I have... Oh, yes, that's how I rotate it. There we go. So Alec and Nushka and one of the skeletons are going to get hit by this. So go ahead and roll a dexterity save.
I rolled a natural 20 and a 1 for me.
Wow.
Oh, did you have disadvantage or advantage?
No, I have advantage.
Oh, for barbarian, right.
Yeah, danger sense.
Fantastic.
And Pipsky rolled an 18, which gives her an unnatural 20.
Okay.
I rolled a 15.
Okay. The skeleton, I imagine, is not going to fare too well. That's a nat 1. So the full damage from the lightning breath that comes in is 51. So half would be 25.
Ouch.
The skeleton behind you, Alec, gets... you see a few bones just sort of get, like, zapped and vaporized immediately. But it's not enough to quite topple the skeleton over completely. It is still on its bony feet.
Okay, I think I clicked on Pipsky and I can't see anything now.
Okay. Does Pipsky have dark vision? She does, right?
Yes.
Vision, yeah, has dark vision. There is something weird going on with permissions and Pipsky for
you.
Oh,
there it goes.
Right?
Yep.
So now it's working?
Yeah, now everything just popped back up.
Okay. I don't know what happened there. let's see here. Okay. After that, how far has it flown? Let's see. That's about its movement. Okay. So that is its turn. Who has... Let's see. Rook, you could see it. Kellen, your view is blocked by a pillar at the moment. Alec and Rook, go ahead and make Arcana checks real quick.
Kellen just screams, "What the shit was that?"
26.
Okay, great. And Rook?
It's a good roll.
27. Okay, yeah. Both of you immediately recognize that creature as a Dracolich.
Cool.
I'm going to shout out. Hey, can we get out of here? Kellen or Alec, can either of you get us out of here quickly?
Negative. We just got to get Grandma on the back of the Dracolich, and I think that the problem will sort itself out.
Can try and plane shift us, but we all got to be touching each other.
How long does that take to cast?
Well, that brings us to the end of the first round of combat. given that it is 1:45, that is probably where we want to pause for the moment.
One round of combat and I'm at half health. And that's after 3 bits of healing.
Do you think the heart of Nevthalion was going to be a cakewalk?
You know what? I was actually not going to be surprised if you did something where we come in and we find that there are actually still a bunch of elven descendants who had held out in the very heart and were still alive and just hadn't ever surfaced in all of these hundreds of years. And we got to have a conversation with them. You know, I figured that was just as likely as a big battle.
Okay. So I guess next time.
Oh,
we
really
can...
like that music.
Let's see. This one's from the Blood and Wine expansion to Witcher.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, so when we come back, we can pick up in the central chamber of Nevthalion, in the darkness and the ice, in a fight against the Dracolich.
Our title track, They Left Me In Here, was composed by Daniel Ran as part of the Beyond Skyrim Bruma original soundtrack and is being utilized under Creative Commons 4 Attribution Sharealike license. Enjoy what you heard? Check us out online at rancorsbrothel.com and the Rancor's Brothel Facebook page. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share this show with your friends. Want to chat? Follow us on Twitter at rancors_brothel or by emailing therancorsbrothel@gmail.com. To interact with other fans, check out the Fans of the Rancor's Brothel Facebook page. Most of all, keep circulating the tapes. Much love, everybody.